And it is 10 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 1 p.m. in the East Coast. It is 8 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is February 1st, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis, and this is The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to follow up with the latest Syrian peace negotiation from Geneva. And then we're going to touch base with Brazil latest Bogota, and we're going to ponder together on BBS Radio, of course, Studio One, where we're going to go from here. You see, we started February, the month of love, you know, Valentine's Day is 2 weeks away, and we want to go and start sending the world some kind of encouragement, and all the people who are on the job daily and are negotiating what's going to be next. And of course, to those contender to the presidential race in the USA, we wish all the best in the world. And we love your heart. We hope that you succeed. And no matter who's going to win, you're all champions, because you give out your heart away to save the world. And it's important this time and age. And, of course, for the only girl, the actual two girls in the race, we encourage them. So let's start with another champion, one of the best women that we have in the world right now, Angelina Jolie, a woman that give us all a womanhood a reason to look up and to hope that we can make a difference in the world. Let's listen to that.
And now I'll give the floor to Miss Angelina Jolie. Bitch, you have the floor, madam.
Mr. President, foreign ministers, your excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, it is an honor to brief the council. I thank His Excellency, the Foreign Minister of Jordan, the High Commissioner for Refugees, my colleagues from OCHA, and the World Food Program. Since the Syria conflict began in 2011, I have made 11 visits to Syrian refugees in Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey, and Malta. I wish that some of the Syrians I have met could be here today. I think of the mother I met recently in a camp in Iraq. And she could tell you what it's like to try to live after your young daughter is ripped from your family by armed men and taken as a sex slave. I think of Hala, one of six orphaned children living in a tent in Lebanon. She could tell you what it's like to share the responsibility for feeding your family at the age of 11 because your mother died in an airstrike and your father is missing. I think of Dr. Ayman, a doctor from Aleppo, who watched his wife and three-year-old daughter drowned in the Mediterranean when a smuggler's boat collapsed, packed with hundreds of people. He could tell you what it's like to try to keep your loved ones safe in a war zone, only to lose them in a desperate bid for safety after all other options have failed. Any one of the Syrians I have met would speak more eloquently about the conflict than I ever could. Nearly 4 million Syrian refugees are victims of a conflict they have no part in. Yet they are stigmatized, unwanted, and regarded as a burden. So I'm here for them, because this is their United Nations. Here, all countries and all people are equal, from the smallest and most broken member states to the free and powerful. The purpose of the UN is to prevent and end conflict, to bring countries together, to find diplomatic solutions, and to save lives. We are failing to do this in Syria. Responsibility for the conflict lies with the warring parties inside Syria. But the crisis is made worse by division and indecision within the international community, preventing the Security Council from fulfilling its responsibilities. In 2011, the Syrian refugees I met were full of hope. They said, please tell people what is happening to us, trusting that the truth alone would guarantee international action. When I returned, hope was turning to anger. The anger of a man who held up his little baby asking me, is this a terrorist? Is my son a terrorist? On my last visit in February, anger had subsided into resignation, misery, and the bitter question, why are we, the Syrian people, not worth saving? To be a Syrian caught up in this conflict is to be cut off from every law and principle designed to protect innocent life. International humanitarian law prohibits torture, starvation, the targeting of schools and hospitals. But these crimes are happening every day in Syria. The Security Council has powers to address these threats to international peace and security. But those powers lie unused. The UN has adopted the responsibility to protect concept, saying that when a state cannot protect its people, the international community will not stand by. But we are standing by in Syria. The problem is not lack of information. We know in excruciating detail what is happening in Yarmouk, in Aleppo, in Homs. The problem is lack of political will. We cannot look at Syria and the evil that has arisen from the ashes of indecision and think this is not the lowest point in the world's inability to protect and defend the innocent. And I say this as someone who is proud to have been a part of the UN system for 13 years. I don't think enough people realize just how many people are fed, sheltered, protected, and educated by the United Nations every day of the year. But all of this good is undermined by the message being sent in Syria, that laws can be flouted, chemical weapons can be used, hospitals can be bombed, aid can be withheld, and civilians starved with impunity. So on behalf of the Syrian refugees, I make three pleas to the international community. The first is an appeal for unity. It is time for the Security Council to work as one to end the conflict and reach a settlement that also brings justice and accountability for the Syrian people. It is very encouraging to see ministerial representation from Jordan, Spain, and Malaysia here today. But I think we would all like to see foreign ministers of all the Security Council members here working on a political solution for Syria as a matter of urgency. In the last few months, we have seen intensive diplomacy at work elsewhere in the region. So now let us see what is possible for the people of Syria. And while these debates are important, I also urge the Security Council to visit Syrian refugees, to see firsthand their suffering and the impact it is having on the region. Those refugees cannot come to the Council. So please, will you go to them? And second, I echo what is being said about the support from Syria's neighbors, who are making an extraordinary contribution. It is sickening to see thousands of refugees drowning on the doorstep of the world's wealthiest continent. No one risks the lives of their children in this way except out of utter desperation. If we cannot end the conflict, we have an inescapable moral duty to help refugees and provide legal avenues to safety. And third, the barbarism of those inflicting systematic sexual violence demands a much greater response from the international community. We need to send a signal that we are serious about accountability for these crimes, and that the only hope, and that is the only hope for establishing any deterrence. So I call on member states to begin preparations now so that Syrian women are fully represented in future peace negotiations in accordance with multiple resolutions in the Security Council. And if I may make a wider final point to conclude my remarks, the crisis in Syria illustrates that our inability to find diplomatic solutions causes mass displacement, traps millions of people in exile, statelessness, and displacement. 52 million people are forcibly displaced, a sea of excluded humanity. And while our priority must be ending the Syrian conflict, we must also broaden out the discussion to this much wider problem. Our times will be defined not by the crises themselves, but by the way we pull together as an international community to address them. Thank you.
All right, we are back. That was Angelina Jolie, the Ambassador of Goodwill of the World to United Nations Security Council, where she spoke very eloquently, a very, very nice way to all the members of a different state about the situation in Syria. She spoke about it. This is a segment from few years back, I guess, but the situation in Syria never changed. It got worse. So right now, on the eve of the negotiation between the parties in Syria, we call and we pray on all the people that do the work, that make the talk, to come to a conclusion with ceasefire and feed the hungry and give them shelter. This is the first. This is the emergency situation right now. And of course, they must stop the bombing. It's not possible to negotiate peace accord with the bombing of any party. And, you know, the ISIS bomb yesterday, and many people got killed just, you know, to ruin the hope that people have. But the members party that play an important role are there. And there is a message that the UN envoy gave the Syrian people. And we want to listen to it. Let's listen.
My message today is meant to reach every single man, woman, child of Syria, inside Syria and outside, in the refugee camps or wherever you are. You know, in the next few days, we are planning to launch what we call the intra-Syrian talks, negotiations, in order to have progress in the context of reaching, finally, stability and peace and dignity back in Syria. You deserve it. 5 years of this conflict have been too much. The horror is in the front of everyone's eyes. You must know also that we count on you to raise your voice, to say halas is enough, to say to everyone who is actually coming from Syria and from abroad to this conference that there are expectations on them to make sure that their vision, their capacity of compromise and discussion for reaching a peaceful solution in Syria is now, and they need to produce that. You have seen enough conferences, two of them already taking place. This one cannot fail. We have heard your voices. We have heard when you've been telling us so many times, wherever we have met you, you Syrian people, you women, men, and children of Syria saying, enough, halas, kefaya, enough killing, murdering, torturing, prisons, enough buildings being destroyed, enough bombing my city where I am, and I don't know who is bombing me. I just see bombs coming down, rockets, anything. Enough my brother, my sister, being humiliated and becoming a refugee and trying to take a boat and drawing in the Mediterranean when I love my country. Enough when you see your children say, I want to go to school and I cannot go to school because you are not allowing me to do because it's too dangerous. All this, we have heard it. Now we need to hear your voice to everyone who is coming to this conference saying this conference must be an opportunity not to be missed. We are going not to disappoint you from the UN point of view. You know, we will never abandon the Syrian people. But we need now you to feel that this time is the right one. We'll do all what we can. God willing. Assalamu alaikum.
All right. That was Stefan Mistura from the envoy, special envoy from the United Nations, which people trust and believe. And it will help bring some kind of negotiation and settlement to the Syrian people. And, you know, khalas is the Arabic for saying enough. And it's enough. You guys, I'm the daughter of Israel. I'm here for the Syrian people, calling upon everybody to stop. Khalas with this. It's enough. You guys are driving this world crazy. From wherever you come, I don't know what the men are doing in this conflict to just inflame it again and again and again. And on the ground in Israel, there are kids stabbing people in the street. There are kids stabbing women inside the houses. What's wrong with this picture? And you Palestinian brothers of the land of Israel, you're sitting here on the land taking advantage of everything, and you still stab women and children. Shame on you. And whoever wants to give those people shelter, shame on them. And it's enough. And the United Nations, you know, you guys have, you know, we have a bone to pick. But right now we're talking about the Syrian people. So before I start getting mad on you, let's listen to some music we put for you. All right? All right, and we are back. It's Orly Betty Davis with the Impossible Truth on BBS Radio, the radio for you, by the people, for the people. And we are here. We just spoke about the Syrian refugee crisis and the situation in the, you know, in Syria and the talk. And right now we have a news that the European Union is committed $2.2 billion to the Syrian refugees in a daughter meeting. They made a commitment, and it's good news. It's good news. Keep it coming, because we need more. They said that they need to raise $7 billion to start coping and, you know, release. It doesn't matter. We start working, it will happen. Everybody needs to come to play and make a part of it. And, you know, the U.S. military reported a 13 airstrike in Iraq, 5 in Syria. I don't know if more strikes are needed at this point. We just need to, you know, keep on squaring the ISIS. Don't let them get any funding. Don't get them any oil. You're doing a good job. Keep it going. It's, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to win. And on the midst of everything, we learned that the Russian and U.S. diplomats are holding a meeting in Syria, on Syria, in Geneva. And this is, of course, in according with Stefan de Mistura, the guy, the United Nations envoy. And it's the with the U.S. Assistant Secretary of the State, Near Eastern Affair, Ann Peterson. Girls are making a difference in this conflict, and I'm telling you, we need girls' representation on the negotiation team, too. At the end of the day, we have a great clip right now, a great clip that I want you to listen. I know that it's intense, but we need to get going. This is not funny when people are dying and we are not, you know, moving fast enough. Let's start Save the Day. Let's listen to this.
Washington's decision to deploy its commandos in Syria comes the same day as the country's peace talks in Vienna, attended by 20 of the world's top diplomats. The move, though, caught many by surprise, including, it seems, the chief U.S. negotiator, John Kerry.
It's really a coincidence that it came out today. I had no idea as we were We began the day, I'd heard about it, but it wasn't until this morning that I knew that the decision had been made.
At the press conference, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov highlighted the main points of the group's plan for Syria. RT's Harry Fear has more now from Vienna.
Well, it was the most anticipated day here yet in Vienna for these crisis talks, closing the second week here of discussions on how to have a political solution for the 4.5-year conflict in Syria. And it took the delegates a full 7 to 8 hours of work to bring us some good news, apparently. Listen to this.
There are some points on which we have made improvements.
So this is a process now that has some momentum, that will go forward, and that in itself is extremely positive.
Well, it was a breakthrough indeed, apparently, not least in part because there was such a broad church of delegates, included a full 19, including a delegation for the United Nations, and also Iran at the table for the first time, thanks to repeated Russian pressure calling for more inclusiveness, calling for Iran and Egypt and other such nations to be brought into the fold. And the conference's two main diplomatic and networking powerhouses were the US Secretary of State John Kerry and Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov too. And they brought to the world what they say is a 9-point plan, a takeaway from these 2 weeks of talks. Let's break it down. First of all, they want to get the government and the opposition to a negotiating table. The conference is going to ask the UN to invite the government and opposition groups to begin a political process. Second, they want to see an inclusive administration formed within months, not years. They want to see a secular government for Syria. And they also say, of course, constitutional reform is key. The conference also apparently agreed that elections must be part of the picture of a settlement, and it must be the Syrian people themselves who decide the country's future. All of the parties today at conference also agreed on the importance of having a nationwide ceasefire in Syria, of course, not including the so-called Islamic State, though. They also agreed terror groups, terror itself must be targeted in Syria, and that they must draw up a unified, uniformly agreed list of what these terror groups actually are. Also, that humanitarian groups must be allowed to continue their work throughout Syria. Well, the EU foreign policy chief underscored that the inclusiveness of the conference as it now stands was key to having the success that we've seen today.
This meeting was definitely not an easy one, but for sure an historical one, as we had for the first time all the actors around the table.
Well, it took them a full 8 hours of negotiations to get just that far, and we were here all day, throughout the day, waiting on Hair Trigger Alert to bring you any good news that they were able to come with from their talks. No doubt they were also exhausted too, but they came out of those marathon talks on a positive note. Listen now to Sergei Lavrov.
We will be back.
Exactly.
So they will be back in 2 weeks. We will also be back in 2 weeks following the developments at this historical conference, trying to find a political solution for the bloody crisis in Syria.
All right. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. It's Monday, guys. We have to talk about some information that's coming and continues coming. We have so much in stake right now, and of course tonight there is the elections in the USA to the primaries, the first one ever, and it's important to understand what's in stake to see where we're going. And before we continue, I want to open just a parenthesis for a minute to let you think about what's the situation with Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is the only woman that is really in the race for real, because everybody know that she's expert. And of course, we have some question about her ability to manage the world's affairs, when we had such a shortcoming in Benghazi. But, you know, she was a Secretary of State then. I don't think that defense was her, you know, something that she needed to handle. the same thing like having classified information brought to the email. The FBI probably knows better that, you know, that the things that are classified are not going through secure to non-secure. It's like bank account. The FBI is in charge and they know what they're doing, and they're doing such a good job, you know, years after years. So the fact that they overclassified it later, it's, doesn't make a difference. She didn't pass any information, and you guys know what kind of a commitment she has to the world, to America, and she dedicated all her life to serve and to give. So as a woman to a woman, I want to recognize her effort. I want to recognize she looks great lately too, you know. I want to tell you guys that maybe after all this mess, we just recognize how gifted she is and how important for us to recognize a good leader when we see one, and stop bouncing back and forth with crazy idea like let's ruin the all-American social system and choose Sanders, or let's take everything that we can take, like Donald Trump. When a woman come and she can fix things. So, you know, in Iowa tonight, you guys, God bless you all. And of course, Republicans are my buddy friends. I know, but if you choose Donald Trump, we're going to have to choose, you know, the woman in the bunch. And that's the way it's going to go. And I want to see a woman president, and I believe in womenhood, and I believe what we can do, and I know what we can do. So, by all means, let's choose right. Now, let's go back to our affairs, okay? This is Orly Betty Davis with Impossible Truth. Let's get some music going, and then we'll be back with a Syrian affair again, all right?
Everywhere, freaks and fairies, dykes and fairies, tell me where it's empty. Tax the rich, feed the poor, till there are never rich no more.
All right, it's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. I'm telling you, there is news in the world that give you a moment of enlightenment every time, again and again, how silly this world got to be. Because we just learned today that one of the best chefs, you know, cooking chef of the world, from Hotel de Ville, took his life because they were about to take his star, you know, the star that they give to the best chef. He had like three stars, and he was about to lose one. And for that, a guy of 44 years from Switzerland killed himself. I am so sad, and God bless his soul. But for Michelin star to just take away life, is it worth it? You know, women are usually the like decoration, beauty, dresses, okay. But this is like superficial. You know how good you are. Never depend on stars or recognition. If you live for your life become attached to it. Try to remember that God loves you. He created you. You're a child of this universe, and all the talent is given to you by your creator. You are it. You don't need to be recognized. And if you come, you know, look at those people from, you know, are in the street down here. Don't you think there are artists, musicians, singers, chefs, everybody are there. And what they have to show for nothing. And what do you think? That if they got all those stars, it will help them now? It wouldn't. I really want you to to think. And I know it's not easy. It's not easy to be rich one day and then to lose property the next day, you know, by the fall down of the economy. One day you're also a president, and the next day you're, you know, a citizen, and all, you know, the trumpet that you used to hear are gone. Don't be like that. Don't depend on those, because, you know, the awakening is really steep. And I'll tell you what, I'll tell you a story. You know, when you're in the light of, and those people, the famous people, know it very well, better than me. I'm just telling you a part of being a part of this world, that sometimes you got the flash of the recognition in the world, and the spotlight are on you. And you feel incredible. You know, you are awesome. You know, you arrived to that moment, you know, glorified. You made it, right? The next day, you wake up alone in your room, bed, and you look around. There is nobody to cheer you up. There is nobody to say hello or to say how beautiful you are, how great you are, or wow, what a persona you are. And you feel lonely, and you feel, you know, you're a little alone. And I'll call it, I named that syndrome. It's a syndrome. I call them the prima donna syndrome. And every given time that I have the capacity to arrive high, the next day I feel down, I call myself to order, and I tell them to myself, what did you do for the world lately that you pretend to get all this attention? So I snap back and I do something great for the universe. So I make up to whatever I'm missing, but I'm giving it back to the world so I can be, I deserve more attention one day, but in a good way, or whatever God gave me, it was good enough. So that's the prima donna syndrome. That I came from the realization of many, many days that, life taught me. So thank God for those, and thank God for everything. And you be careful on your life. Your life was given to you. You have no right to take it away. It's the world to share, and we're all sharing it. So you guys, live it up, okay? Give it what you can. Be the best. And don't give up. You know, those are tests of the time. I don't know how you're going to handle things. But if you trust, if you do it with all your heart, give it the best. I'm sure God will show you the way. All right. So let's go to the next segment that I prepare for you.
Iran says the United Nations should keep a watchful eye on the Syria peace talks, as the terrorists may try to take advantage of the opportunity. Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the comment during a phone conversation with the United Nations Syria envoy Stefan de Mistura. Amir Abdollahian stressed that a political solution is the only way out of the current situation in Syria. He said the future of Syria must be decided by the Syrian people. UN official Stefan de Mistura has hailed Iran's efforts to settle the crisis in Syria. He said establishing a political process in Syria and fighting terrorism are the focal points of the talks underway in the Swiss city.
All right. So we're saying the bad guys are going to try to ruin whatever you guys have to give. Yes, that's true. So let's not give them a chance. Now, let's see if we have some music so we can change the tune and go to our next subject. It will be something about Brazil. right, it's only Benny Davis with the impossible truth on BBS Radio. Well, we have a few months ahead, we're going to have to make a decision about the Olympics. The Olympics are going to take place in Brazil, in Rio. And right now we have some kind of bugs going there and having attacking people, and the newborn, you know, people, the children that are being born are not right. It's dangerous for women to get attacked, and many athletes, women athletes, are concerned, and they're thinking about the consideration if they choose between a healthy child or being a champion, something that no one needs to decide in the world. So it's not easy. Let's see. Let's listen to what we have on that.
These efforts are on all fronts. They're trying to come up with a vaccine against Zika, and they're also trying to get more places that can do a test for Zika, because right now you have to send blood to the CDC to be tested, or maybe a handful of other places. And speaking of blood, take a look at these photos. This is Dr. Scott Weaver at the Galveston National Laboratory in Texas, and he is feeding mosquitoes sheep blood that has been spiked with Zika. He and his team will then study the mosquitoes, see how they digest it, see how quickly the mosquitoes themselves become infectious. And this is really important, Carol, because mosquitoes are what spread Zika virus. The mosquito bites an infected person and then turns around and bites another person, and then that person becomes infected. So studying these mosquitoes, as sort of yicky as it looks, is really key to controlling this virus.
So how do you stop those infected mosquitoes from coming into the United States?
Right. Well, it's actually not so much that they're coming into the United States. That's not as much the issue. It's that infected people are coming into the United States from Brazil and other places, and then the mosquito bites those people and then bites someone else nearby. And so what you can do to stop that is that you try to catch as many infected people as you can, and then you try to control it that way. So for example, if you know that someone has Zika, these mosquitoes love to live in houses, so you can spray that person's house. You can take those kinds of measures in order to try to slow the spread of the disease.
So just a last question, because it sounds very scary. How afraid should we be?
You know, Carol, every expert I talked to said that they really, truly do not think that Zika will be nearly as bad in this country, in the United States, as it has been in Brazil. And here's why. It's a lot hotter in Brazil, and these mosquitoes, they love the heat. And even in places like Texas and Florida, there's a lot of air conditioning. These mosquitoes do not like air conditioning. There are all sorts of other reasons. We're much better at mosquito control in the United States than they are in Brazil. This is what the experts tell me. And also, people tend to live further apart in the United States. It's not so densely populated. That means the mosquitoes have farther to go. I know that sounds odd. Of course, they can fly, but the farther apart the people are, the slower the spread of the disease. So they think, will it spread in this country? Probably. You probably will see some spread, but they think it will be very limited.
All right. So there you have it. It's not funny. The mosquito can endanger people, and it's traveling. And when you have a champion that takes care of their, you know, its body, and do everything possible to keep healthy, to come to infected area, it's crazy. It's actually a little reckless. And people need to address it. The people of the world, you know, of sports, need to really take a good look at the situation, make a fast decision, because we are 9 months away, but things can be changed. Venue can be changed. There are other places in the world that can host it. You know, we've been around for one in the USA, and I remember the Olympic took place in Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm sure that we can have something in that regard that can help, you know, replace the crisis that we have in our hands right now in Brazil. And as the situation of the government is very sensitive, to say the least. We can be really concerned about the behavior of the people in charge and how they're going to be responsible. So we have three reasons they are good enough to become a factor. One is the mosquito factor, that it's endangering the athletes. Second, the crisis, the meltdown that they have in the government right now there because of corruption issues that goes all the way to the presidency. And the third one, with all this world crisis on terrorism, I wouldn't expect a much, you know, care taking on their behalf, because Brazil is not, you know, a country that I remember as the one that consider, you know, terrorist attack as something that they have, because, you know, well, I'm not sure about that. Let me take back that before I say something. You know, probably there will be very much reasonable issues on the defense. But by all means, even though I'm sure that they would keep to do the best to keep everybody safe, those mosquitoes is not something. It's actually a different kind of terrorism, nature-wise. All right. It's almost time, guys. It's past, and let's touch base with some issue before I let you go. Yesterday there was incredible issue resolved with a many-year standoff of women. There are a certain branch of the Judaism, a reform one, that from the USA, that moved to the Western Wall in Jerusalem and wanted to pray with all the shawl and everything that is not really Orthodox. You see, you come to a holy place where Orthodox Judaism is in control. The Judaism fraction is the one in charge. And they wanted to break the rules, and they didn't let them. So by all fighting, they decided to give them another piece of the wall to pray there. But holy macaroni, they chose to have a section of the wall, you know, like retarded people sometimes do. They said, okay, you want to pray here? Let's pray there. And then they put their hands on a very important archaeological site. You don't give archaeological site of 2,000 years to people just because they want to pray with a shawl or with a yarmulke or whatever. It doesn't matter. You have to understand, Christianity is another fraction of Judaism that went away, right? That's his reform. Reform is going away from Judaism. It's a not Jewish as per se. And please, let's not be technical on this, but this is the life that you have to deal with. This is the truth you have to deal with. This is the impossible truth you have to listen to. Because Judaism is Orthodox. It means that you divide women. You know, this is the Old Testament book. Now there are people who decide, oh, you know what, we cannot mix marriages, let's invent something. In 1865, let's invent a movement that says, okay, you are allowed to intermarriage. It's like Catholics when they intermarriage. Can you become all Catholic? You cannot. So the Jewish people, the Reform movement, decided they can mix. So they're not really all Jewish. It's fine. But they are part of us, their sister, brother. We love them. Not a problem. But you cannot change Judaism because you decided to mix marriage. Or you decided to play the piano in Yom Kippur, where the Kippur is the holiest of world. You are not supposed to do that. But they decide to change the rules. Also, Christianity become Christianity as a part of the end of that. So what I'm saying is, you don't ruin, cultural sites of 2,000, 3,000 years just because. All right? So let's end this on this note. And remember, there is a God and it's not us. And I love you. And I'm sending you all my best prayer. And God bless you wherever you are. May this week will be incredible week for everybody, and you will complete whatever you can to make a difference. God bless you all from Israel, the Holy Land. Ciao, ciao.